Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. One of the things that I'm proudest of about Bookworm is that we have been speaking to my guest, Heidi Julewitz, since her very first book. And our job is to discover the new things that are interesting, and if they stay interesting, we talk about the later books. And now we have the fourth novel by Heidi Julewitz called The Vanishers, and the subject matter, and we're going to go deep, is mothers and daughters, and daughters and mothers. And it's fascinating to me because this has been the subject not only of her previous book, The Uses of Enchantment, but as well, in its way, parents and children, children and parents, the subject of her husband, Ben Marcus's most recent book, The Flame Alphabet, which you heard about just a few weeks ago on KCRW.
That's the first time I'd ever heard of that novel.
It
came as a shock to me. Yeah.
And now tell me, first of all, because I can't imagine proceeding without doing this, the relation to your own mother.
I have the most idyllic relationship with my own mother, which is to say, and I guess I should clarify that pretty much nobody in my books has an idyllic relationship with their own mother. These relationships are pretty thorny, prickly. There's hostility and but a lot of love too, right? Complicated, barbed love. Not only do I have an incredible relationship with my mother, but you know, one of the other predominant female relationships in The Vanishers is a mentor-mentee relationship that gets pretty dark and combative. And again, when I think of the mentors I've had, it's all just been sunny, sunny, happy love fests, you know? So when I write novels, I am often most interested in exploring phenomena that seem to be culturally pretty widespread, but that I have never experienced myself.
Now, Julia Severn is the narrator of The Vanishers. And to begin slowly so that everyone can have an idea of this book, gradually Julia comes to realize that everyone, her mentor, whose name is
Madame Ackerman,
and a person for whom she seems to be working named Alwyn, and a member of the royalty of Hungarian face care.
I think it is the Hungarian skincare aristocracy. She's a member of Hungarian skincare aristocracy.
That all of these remind her in one way or another of her mother, whom she has never met.
Yes, yes.
Because her mother committed suicide when she was
like a month old or a couple weeks old. Yeah. So in a way, they can't remind her of them because she's never met her. I mean, what interested me about this particular mother-daughter relationship, which actually doesn't exist, really, is that Julia's in the position of grieving a person she never met. And so, because if you don't have a mother, obviously that's a lack in your life that you're aware of, that everyone around you is aware of, and people treat you differently because of it. And yet, she is in some ways not mourning or grieving a person. She's grieving the experience of grieving a person.
Exactly. You say that she's missing.
She's missing a missing. Yeah. Yeah. Which to me, and so much of this novel, though there is this sort of psychic conceit or psychic overlay, to me, is grounded in very familiar feelings or very familiar experiences. So, for example, when I thought about this notion of missing a missing, to me, that really mimicked how, at least in my experience, how grief mutates over time, how when you heal, right, air quotes around heal, from some kind of traumatic experience, that you are, in a strange way, missing the feeling of missing something. And my analogy is always, and I think I came up with this because once I was, one of the first interviews I did for this novel, I was sitting in somebody's apartment, and the apartment was in Brooklyn, and it looked straight out to the harbor and over to Manhattan where the Trade Towers would have been. And so suddenly I was like, ah, the air, right? The nothing in the sky, as DeLillo called it, right?
And in this book, what's so interesting is that that connection, so real psychologically, becomes magical. It's made into magic because this narrator is at a very special institute called
the Institute for Integrated Parapsychology, which is shorthanded as the workshop, which I hope everybody who takes creative writing classes or is getting an MFA can find a little humor in that.
Well, she then feels not a psychological connection to her mother, but a mystical, occult fascination. So the thing that happens in this book, The Vanishers, by my guest Heidi Jungowitz, is that the feelings between mother and daughter get transformed into occult feelings from beyond the grave, and there are mirror states. In life, the mother, who has not allowed her medium daughter access, has nevertheless created a whole range of doppelgangers, even people who seem to be having cosmetic surgery in order to look like the missing mother. So what you have done in this book and your previous one, The Uses of Enchantment, is to convert the psychological novel into the mystical, occult, magical novel.
Yeah. I mean, but interestingly, what I found fascinating about this occult approach is that, in a strange way, it literalized or made material these emotional states that are otherwise really hard to describe or to describe in any kind of original way. What I was most excited to discover when I was starting this book is the phenomenon called psychic attack, which is when a person launches essentially their negative psychic energy at you and makes you physically ill.
I just about dropped the book when I discovered that you'd learned about psychic attack from the occult writing of Dion Fortune.
Are you familiar with Dion Fortune?
I've been very familiar with Dion Fortune. The books were beautifully bound, first of all. I once worked in a metaphysical bookstore in which an entire shelf
there
was taken to the voluminous writing of Dion Fortune.
She wrote a lot. She wrote a lot. I ordered a bunch of her books. Novels, and then also a number of her, I guess you would call them, nonfiction books. And the one that I just couldn't put down, and I really strongly recommend this as just a reading experience, as a great book, is Psychic Self-Defense. You know, this book, it describes psychic attacks. It defines the varieties of psychic attack. It tells you how you may be psychically attacked and by whom. Essentially, anybody, dead people can attack you. It's a pretty open field for attacks. But what really gave me the springboard into this novel, she describes her own personal experience as an initiate at an occult lodge in England. And she's studying with some superior mentor-type woman, and this woman becomes jealous of Dion Fortune's very evident superior powers.
Well, second layer of astonishment, as you mentioned, the Institute for the Parapsychological is referred to as the workshop. Mm-hmm. And before long, we're reading along, and women writers who have died young, Eva Hesse, Virginia Woolf, Sylvia Plath, get mentioned. And we discover in them, well, Virginia Woolf and her father, Sylvia Plath and her father, and here we have Julia Severn and her mother. It's the distaff version. And she comes very close to death. Her illnesses, which she believes to have been sent at her by her mentor,
by Madame Ackerman, yes,
include rashes and spastic bowel and every kind of thing. She's about to retire as a young initiate. And this often, I'm afraid to say, happens to people in writing school, being in the presence of that much competition.
Yeah, I mean, heck, I got a lot of rashes. I still get rashes. I'll probably develop a rash when I leave you today.
Not from me.
Not from you. No. Just the competitive writing environment in Los Angeles. It's been pointed out to me, and I was aware of this when I was writing it too, the overlap between psychic activity, trying to... These psychics are sort of like Edgar Cayce type psychics. He was called the sleeping prophet. He would lie on a couch and he would transport his mind to any person, any place in the past. I think he went to the future once, but he was mostly a past traveler. And Madame Ackerman, one of her problems is that she lies on her couch and she suddenly can't go anywhere. And
she falls
she's
asleep.
She's blocked. She has psychics block, right? And Julia as well, she's trying so hard to go to this one particular place. She wants to go back in time. She wants to meet her mother, and she can't go there. And that to me so mimics, yeah, what it's like to, I mean, I don't write lying on a couch, but yeah, sometimes you have this desire, this imaginative desire, and it feels like you're going to sprain your brain sometimes. You try so hard to get yourself there, and you can't get there, right?
Now, what I'm wondering about, too, is not only that you can't get there, but where is the road? Is the road through Traumaville or is it through Hilarity Central?
Yeah.
Because what's exciting about this book is it has different tones that keep meeting each other. Are we laughing at Madame Ackerman, Madame Arcadi, Blythe spirit style? Or are we understanding a level of trauma common to everyone specified in this novel, two women having to do with death and being turned metaphorical as interactive medium transcriber behavior?
Yeah, I mean, I have a real problem writing about anything in a head-on manner or a direct manner. And I also, as a reader, my most enjoyable reading experiences are when I am tricked in a way, and I don't use that in a pejorative sense. When I'm tricked by laughing, for example, into suddenly realizing I'm in a much darker space. I mean, a very, very short example of that would be, I mean, much of Bartholomew, but in particular, there's a story that that I end up teaching a lot because it's very short and, you know, you have to teach short things these days. Some of us have been threatening our friend Colby. And it's a hilarious story about a bunch of friends who decide to execute one of their other friends. Hilarious, right? So you're laughing the entire time and you get to the end and you're like, wait, they just killed their friend. And that there can be, you can be laughing as you're being pulled into this other, much scarier territory. In a strange way, you get in a lot deeper because you have no defenses up. You think this is going to be more fun than it is. Not that my book's not a lot of fun, but I find that fun as a reader. I find it to be a different kind. It's almost like emotional plot, if that makes sense.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with the magnificent Heidi Julowitz about her new novel, The Vanishers. We're going to continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Heidi Julowitz about The Vanishers, her novel about female rivalry and the quest of a young psychic to come to terms with her mother's suicide. The thrill is that this is a comic novel. It's accomplished by transforming the material into the world of psychics, their abilities, their sidekicks, their eccentricities, and then, having gotten us to start laughing, to understand that these are often psychological undertones, traumas that we all face, that no one deals with competition with another member of the same sex without entering, re-entering the field of the mother, especially if you think you're avoiding the subject. This woman, Julia, would say, but I don't have a mother. I never had one. To the extent that we had a relationship, it was a big zero.
Yeah. She even says at one point that she should consider herself lucky that she never had to come to hate her mother, as a lot of women at a certain stage of their life, obviously, you have to separate, you have to reject. And, you know, she's kind of a bright side person, so she's trying to spin her motherlessness in some kind of positive way.
Well, you know, and we all try. This is not a book for specialists. It's the fact that this is a universal experience, that it may be in fact hilarious that the person who is frequently the closest to us, the parent, is also the closest enemy.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is where I don't know if this is comforting or depressing. But, you know, every time you start a new book, you think, new territory for me, right? I'm done with all that other stuff that I've already explored, you know, therapy, Freud, blah, 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 right? Mothers and daughters, done, moving on. This is going to be about psychics, mentor, mentees, et cetera. You know, and then, of course, I obviously was just talking about lying on a couch, psychics lying on the couch and going back in time, right? And so much of, again, the sort of literalism of a metaphor, which is why I liked the psychic conceit, is, yeah, her mother is literally haunting her from the past, right? This ghost mother, in the same way that, yeah, you go to therapy, you have to talk about your mom, the one that's still alive, right? But that past version of her that's still haunting your current life. So again, it was a way to, yeah, to make completely literal these things that we speak about, when we're on the couch.
But a therapist in the book says to Julia, you're going to have to give birth to your dead mother before you can cure yourself.
Yes.
And she says, bleep you, before walking out of the office.
Yeah.
But to some extent, that is what Julia seems
it
to
is,
have to
it
do.
It is. You know, one thing that's – there's a lot that's not fun about writing novels. And this novel, I have joked with certain people that this novel psychically attacked me. I really – this one was a struggle for me. It took a lot out of me. And when I finished writing this, I just thought, never again. It is time to, you know, start that catering business I always dreamed of starting.
No.
This, I'm done.
No. From the beginning, I know that you have a tendency to disparage every earlier book as you complete the next one.
Absolutely. I'm ready to... I have my hatchet. I'm going to go after that. It's like you've laid them out on the table so I can just go over and spit on them.
But no, and I wish you would stop that, because Birth, the lost baby in the Mineral Palace, lives with me as a reader. And so your desire to spit on that novel is like spitting on my memory
of it.
It's a book by a really gifted first writer, and some of it is really, you're going deep into the experience, the painful experiences of women in a way that most writers don't and can't.
I don't know why that book makes me so uncomfortable, and I admit that it does. It makes me uncomfortable, and maybe part of it is because it's not funny at all. There's nothing funny about it. And maybe to me that, you know, I wrote that book and I just thought to myself, who wrote that book after I finished it? And I think it was a little bit a product of a dark time I was going through. It was maybe a natural catharsis, right?
But
weirdly, and it's not that I feel too revealed. And so then I had to kind of shield myself by employing humor. That's not it. I think it's sort of getting back to what we talked to you before. I mean, I can certainly name novels that just go for your heart, right? I mean, the one that is frequently brought up, but it does it, is Revolutionary Road or Easter Parade, both novels by Richard Yates. You know, I adore those novels. I adore how they just – they – it's not like watching a car crash because you're kind of in the car, you know? You're at delicious risk as a reader in a strange way. But somehow I guess the methodology, the way of getting at that darkness with the Mineral Palace, it felt too just on the nose in a way. And I wanted to try to recreate some other reading experiences that I'd really enjoyed.
Let me advance my Heidi Jumpitz theory.
I want to hear the theory. I do.
No, I think that it's true.
Okay.
I mean, you're talking
sure
to someone
true.
Who does nothing.
Yeah, no,
but
no. I would never
read.
Doubt a single thing you ever said about me.
I think that your whole method is to tell yourself that by introducing certain elements, you're leaving an armor of comedy on the book. But the armor of comedy rapidly gives way to the material that you can't handle, and the material isn't interesting until it's at a level at which it can't be handled, that you're not really satisfied that you're writing a book until it starts to present you with materials that are going to leave you nearly incapacitated by the end. And on top of it, you're going to have the experience like the M&M. Oh, I built this shell, and now it's a funny book. Will anyone ever know how much it made me suffer? Because, look, it is an entertaining novel. And look, I've managed to induce a reader to touch rashes and irritation points and deep black and blue marks that hurt. Isn't this what a writer is supposed to do? Yes, but maybe not in a comic novel. So I think you succeed when you fail, and you like to construct the novel like a double negative, missing, missing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there is something to be said about the layered approach, right? There is this, and the M&M metaphor, to stick with that. What I hope with, especially this most recent novel, and some of the most exciting feedback that I've received from people is, I just read it in one sitting. Like I whirled through it, and I actually did very purposefully study a lot of actually YA novels that I remember reading and, you know, just not doing anything else until the book was done, right? And trying to isolate what is that engagement? How do you recreate that, right? But obviously something else has to be going on too, right? I don't just want it to be a speed read, but what's sort of fun about a speed read is sometimes the darker stuff doesn't catch up to you until the book is over.
Well, talking about YA, young adult novels, fact is I didn't catch up to Harriet the Spy until I was maybe in my late 20s. And that novel, I still haven't recovered from it.
No, there's some incredible, I mean, it's funny, I was thinking about the YA novels that I valued most, and I recently reread this also, is Summer of Fear by mm-hmm. Lois Duncan. And mm-hmm. Lois Duncan wrote some pretty dark novels for teenagers, such as a bunch of students who hate their teacher and conspire to murder him, and they do. And Summer of Fear is about, I mean, it's essentially about everything I write about. It's a girl, a fake cousin comes to live with her who's actually a witch. She takes her identity, et cetera, et cetera. But these are, they are, they're pushing on the bruise, if you will, to use your bruise metaphor, because it's a nice one, of like an archetypal pain that we like to feel.
That we like to feel.
Yes, that we like to feel.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That is, I think, one of the things that we go to novels for, that they are deliciously dangerous but safe experiences
absolutely.
Of going to a primal place that sometimes even gets healed in the novel reading.
Yeah. I mean, again, if I speak about my own writing process as cathartic, well, reading is certainly even more so. And you can, via these characters, vent your own, your fears, your really unattractive jealousies. You can put these all on somebody else and let them take the ride. And then you can feel a lot better afterwards.
I've been speaking with Heidi Julewitz, author most recently of The Vanishers, published by Doubleday. Thank you, Heidi, for joining me.
Thank you for having me again.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Vanishers at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Alan Howard is the co-producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. The engineer today was Philip Richards, filling in for Mario. Special thanks to Craig Erthine. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.